Hello, and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast number 914. The topic is nutrition, and the title is How to Eat During a Deload. Now, if you don't know what a deload is, we're going to talk about that in today's podcast, and it's actually more universal than what you'd think. Typically, the term of a deload is used in specifically in strength-based training. However, we can think of this as any time that we have to kind of like pull back on our training intensity and or volume. Now, that could be a planned pullback, planned reduction, and I'll explain why. Or it can also just be where life gets in the way and maybe we can't work out as often as we would that week, or we have to change something because maybe we tweaked an elbow, tweaked a knee, and we can't lift as heavy as we used to lift. So if there's a time of just kind of general exercise reduction, how would we handle our nutrition during that time? So this can be useful for all of us to know, even if you don't train in a way that would require what would be called a deload. So this question came in from a listener. So I'm going to read through what they wrote, and then we're going to kind of go through it and give the answer for everybody. So they wrote, absolutely love the podcast. I want to sincerely thank you for all the tremendous information you so selflessly share. That was nice of them. It is amazing, and I have a ton of respect for the gift you give us each day. Thank you. I'm trying like crazy to go back into past episodes to absorb them. Awesome. So yes, if you like the current ones, make sure you also try to listen backwards as well as listening forwards. We try to have just progressive increasing information based on the podcast. So we're always trying to just kind of grow with what we know. So it's always good to check out the old ones if you have not. They continue. I also follow on your social media. I noticed on Instagram you were looking for potential topics. I have a topic I have been researching, but I'm not grasping very well. This is exactly why we have the podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It may not be a great topic. Hey, yes, it is. But I thought I would throw it out there. So they've been following a lifting program called Mad Cow 5x5, fantastic name. the craziest names out there. I have made a lot of good progress on the program, combined with your podcast advice. I am focused on powerlifting. Yes. As I wind down to the end of this program and cycle, it is suggesting a deload period. I have read about these in other materials. I will admit not understanding this. Do I not lift at all? How long does it last? Do I change how I eat? Do I go right back to my heaviest lifts? Should I shift to a new program? They finish up saying, I appreciate any guidance you may be able to provide. I recently listened to your podcast on coaching, and it really resonated with me. Thank you for the self-check and some of your podcasts. Awesome. Well, thank you for sending in the question. Thank you for everybody who's been sending in questions. I did ask on our social media channel for any kind of content suggestions that people might have. So if you don't follow us on Instagram, our name on Instagram is Brutal Iron Gym, please follow us. I post every single day, and it's content different than the podcast. So it's actually like visual-based, like educational learning. So maybe we'll teach like a training technique or a self-rehab technique. But the Instagram page is absolutely worth following if you like our podcast at all. So let's go through this. What is a deload? Well, a deload is an intentional reduction in training volume and or intensity. And we're going to go through how do you pick which one and stuff. First of all, it's not good that program doesn't tell you these things. So any program that asks you to do something should tell you how to do it. I do programming as well, whether it's one-on-one in person, and then we also have our monthly programming, which is based on goals. So that would be similar to like a Mad Cow 5x5, where they're assuming you want to work on strength, so here's a program that helps build strength. Well, we have programs for strength. We have male programs and female programs because males and females actually do need to train differently when it comes to strength training. In our programs account for that. So I have a program that would be a similar kind of comparison offer, service offer, to what a Mad Cow 5x5 or any other coach is programming. And if I were to ask someone to do something in my programming, I would explain it. So I hope that that program explains it in some way, and if they don't, that's a pretty big missing chunk of information. Now, what a deload is often programs, if you can't work with somebody in person, you have to figure out how to control and account for intensity, the increasing addition of intensity. And one of the ways we can think of this, there's a lot of facets to it, but let's just pick one. And let's think of collateral damage, meaning that if I'm training a specific muscle, let's say I'm training my back, and it involves me in doing exercises like rows and pull-ups where I'm holding on to something all the time. Well, every time I want to train my back, I'm technically training my hands because they're holding on to the implements. Since I'm using my hands, I'm going to be using my forearm muscles. My forearm muscles are connected to my elbow joint. And I also know that my biceps are going to be contracting kind of any kind of row, any kind of pull-up. So that's going to pull from the elbow joint to the shoulder joint. So what this means is every time I do a row, every time I do a pull-up, I am using my forearm muscles, my wrist, and my elbow. Well, does the program account for the fact that you use your elbow joint whenever you're doing back training? Plus, maybe the very next day you're doing chest press. So then, therefore, your elbows are involved in the chest press. Maybe the very next day you're doing back squats, barbell back squats, while your elbows are involved in externally rotating to get their hands up on the barbell. So really, you would have trained something to do with your elbows 3 days in a row. This can accumulate collateral damage, meaning it's damaging the tissues around the elbow. It's not bad necessarily, it's just stress load. But if you don't account for that, and you have like day after day after day after day of your elbows being used, in the program it might look like you're training different muscles. One day's back, one day's chest, one day's legs. So it sounds like they're not directly competing with each other. However, they are using the elbow every single day. So how do you account for accumulated elbow annoyance? One of the ways that they use is called a deload. So you might push a program for a certain level of increasing intensity. So let's say you're doing a program for 4 weeks. And you would push hard for 1 week, like you try to learn the movements basically. The second week you're getting confident with the movements. The third week you're kind of getting a little bit heavier, trying to progressively get your best at what you can do for each exercise. The fourth week you try to increase in weight or reps for each exercise, but it gets really kind of hard because now all of a sudden this is the fourth week of doing it. There's going to be a challenge to continually increase every single week. So for example, I can't add 5 pounds to my lateral raises every single week. Otherwise, 20 years into lifting, which I am now, I'm actually 21 years into lifting, I'd be lateral raising like 1,000-pound dumbbells. So there becomes a point where you can't push harder and harder and harder on the same thing. The body has learned how to protect itself. The body cannot make the adaptations that you want fast enough for when you want them to be made. So in a sense, what happens is, say after the fourth week, your body's beat up from trying its very best to add one more rep or 5 more pounds or in some way make an increase. The body's beat up. The elbows are stressed. Like we said in our example, the recovery speed of the body is being challenged. It can't recover as fast enough to make another increase in the fifth week. So you take time to do a planned reduction of intensity and or volume to allow the body to recover. So it can fix the elbows. It can, kind of like fix all the damage that's accrued over the 4 weeks. Maybe it just needs a little time. So the deload is a planned time of reduction in intensity and volume. That is the common way people do deloads, is they'll push a program for a period of time, and then they take a week, and one example is reduction in volume. So maybe where their squat, you might typically have done, like, say, 5x5. So they just have you come in and do one set of five. You're going to keep the same weight. So if they're planning only a reduction in volume, you're going to always keep your weight load because that maintains the intensity factor. But you might only do one set of five. Maybe on your assistance exercises, maybe after squat, you typically would do leg press. Maybe you typically would do 4 sets of, say, 12 reps. Now they're only going to have you do 1 set. Maybe even 2 sets. So everything doesn't reduce down to 1 set. But the set count of exercises does reduce. That's how you reduce volume. You keep the weight load you would normally keep, but you're only going to do 1 set or maybe 2 sets. There's definitely some kind of reduction in overall set load. That helps you reduce the volume. Therefore, the body doesn't dig as deep of a hole during the training that you normally would. So That allows the body to kind of catch up. That's what a reduction in volume looks like. What a reduction in intensity looks like is that somebody would say, okay, if we do 5x5, and let's say whatever weight you've been using, we'll call that 100%. So if you've been using 200 pounds, then 200 pounds is 100%. If somebody else has been using 400 pounds, then 400 pounds is their 100%. So they might say, if they want to reduce intensity but keep the volume up, they would say, okay, well, come in and do your 5x5, but do 5x5 at 75% of what you normally would use. So if you've been using 200 pounds, you're now only going to use 150. If you've been using 400 pounds, you're now only going to use 300 pounds. So they'll keep the set count the same, but they'll keep the weight load lower. And that helps you reduce intensity, which is another way of just reducing the overall stress load of the workout, which allows the body to recover during that week. Now, you can do those these ways. People do them successfully in those ways. However, I don't really like to do a deload that way. To me, what it felt like was I was taking a week of just doing everything I knew, but I was like kind of like half-assing my workouts. And I didn't like the feeling of that. So the method I use and the method I use with clients all the time is the first week of a program, if you're learning new exercises, there's no way you can, like, you can't maximize your neurological and kind of body system's absolute best ability because you're still learning the positions. So the first week of a program, you're never going to get 100% intensity because you're still kind of learning how to do everything. You're moving inefficiently because you don't know how to move yet. You haven't had time to practice. So the first week of a program is always going to be a lower intensity than the fourth week of a program. So I just give people new exercises. So they'll work for 4 weeks on the same exercises. Then they go another 4 weeks with brand new exercises. So the first week, we know we're not going to get a full intensity because they're still learning everything. The second week, they're getting confident, and they're definitely getting a lot closer to full intensity and, like, full ability. The third and fourth week, they absolutely are. So, for example, if we had to give percentages to this, maybe the very first week, no matter how well they do, they're still learning the movement, they're only getting, say, 80-ish percent of intensity because they can't maximize everything yet because they don't know how to move yet. The second week, they're getting 90% because they're getting more comfortable with everything. Then the third and fourth week, they're getting 100%, then maybe, you know, I'll just say 102.5. So they're pushing themselves a little extra on that fourth week to force adaptation and growth. So then the fourth week, like the fifth week, we just come back with a new program. And if we know it's new exercises, we know we're bringing it back down to, say, that 80 again. So you might have a cycle where you go 80% for first week, 90% for second week, 100% for the third week, and then you try to push 100% again of your abilities in the fourth week. And then you cycle back through. Now, I'm referring to percentages based on just intensity of how well you can perform yourself. Like, can I give my absolute best to something that I've never done before? Probably not. So I'll be inefficient in the way I move. So even though I perceive myself to be giving 100%, I actually am not. There's actually ways for me to improve the very next workout because I just now have more familiarity with the movement. So I'm not saying you're only going to lift 80% of your ability. What I'm saying is that no matter how much you try to give, you're only ever going to get a lesser amount than 100% because you've never done the movement before. What I like about that is every single week you feel like you're giving your best because each week there's a little bit of a different challenge. The first week you're learning what to do. Second week you're getting more comfortable with it. The third and fourth week you're really pushing yourself. So that feels like every single week you get to give your best. There's never a week where you have to feel like you're half-assing it, which I hated the feeling. And then also I cycle intensity loading. So for example, there are exercises that are high intensity, exercises that are low intensity. There are ones that we call like overloading, underloading. We'll just give you a quick example. So an overload of, like, say a bench press would be if you reverse band bench press. You band a lift from the top of the lift in powerlifting. So say I'm doing a barbell bench press, I can put bands above where the bar is. And when when the bar stretches down into the band, it actually takes some of the load off the band, off the bar. And then you push back up to the top and there's actually very little assistance at all. So what ends up happening is when you reverse band a bench press, you can typically use more weight than you could without the band. So that means it's an overloaded technique. You overload. You load above what you normally could. That's very aggressive, beats up the body really well if that's what you want. But the very next program, the very next 1 month cycle. You would then go into an underloaded technique. So you might band from the very bottom, not from banding from above the bar, you're going to band from below the bar. That makes it very hard because the bands are pulling the bar down at all times. So someone cannot bench as much as they would normally bench with the band pulling the bar down. So that's going to be underloaded. It'll be under the load that they would normally be able to use. That's less stressful on the joints, less stressful on the connective tissues, and that actually is overall less stressful than the overloaded exercise. So if you cycle through loading intensities, you cycle through underload, overload, normal loading, and there's different waves of loading that you would use for different clients and different purposes. But if you cycle the intensity loading, you can actually get the effect of a deload, again, without having to take a week off from training where you feel like you're half-assing everything and just kind of waiting to progress the next week. So those are the methods I'll use in my programming so I can feel like I go into the gym and bust my ass every time and I feel excited and ready to go, but I don't have accumulating fatigue, accumulating damage. So that's why a lot of my clients, like, they're not going to get injured and how they just continue to progress week after week after week, month after month after month, and we get to elite totals, we get to pro cards and aesthetic sports, we get to our goals faster than everybody else because we don't ever take time away from moving forward. We're always moving forward, we're just moving forward in a more intelligent way. Now, that is what a deload is, okay? So we now know that a deload is an intentional reduction of volume and or intensity to allow your body to kind of recover to how hard you've been pushing it in your training. Now, going back to this question now is, how do I eat during a deload? Well, good question. So, what we want to look at is, if we look at what's in our food, let's consider protein to be muscle repair. So muscle repair, and we can call it growth, but I really want you to think of it in this podcast, is that protein is how our muscles recover. So if there is a lot of muscle damage, we would need a lot of protein. If we're lifting weights, but it's not as heavy as we used to lift, it's not as much as we used to lift, we're not accumulating as much muscle damage, we don't need as much protein. Now, what we also want to think of is carbohydrates and fats are our energy resources. So they're like gasoline to a car. You have to put gasoline to get a car to drive. You have to put in carbs and fats to give the body energy. Well, if during a deload week, if I am training with a less volume, less intensity, then I need less fuel. So we know this is the same thing as with a car. If I want to drive across country, I'm going to need a lot more gas than if I just want to drive across the city, right? So what we would look at is, have we had a reduction in muscle damage? Do we need to eat less protein? Have we had a reduction in carbs and in energy usage? Do we need to have a reduction in carbs and fats? So typically what I would do is, if you're going to do the traditional way of doing a deload, so this is not for my clients, unfortunately, but I want them to still learn this so that way if they have to miss some workouts here or there because of a life event, how would they modify the time away from the gym? But what we would have them do, that's the other reason, kind of a side benefit of why I do it the way I do it, is you don't have to change your food all the time, which just makes it easier. So if you go into the beginning of a week, typically deloads are 1 week, because that's, every program is typically written in week cycles. Now, there are occasions that are different out there. Some people write, one guy writes a program in a 9-day cycle, which is just annoying, because our lives don't operate in 9-day cycles, but that's how they did it, so that's how they did it. But what you want to think of is, what is a typical kind of mini cycle within your like larger cycle? So if your cycle is a 4-week cycle, like week by week is a mini cycle, so 1 week. So typically it's just one mini cycle. So if somebody does a 4 9-day sequences, okay, well, 1 9-day sequence is a mini cycle. So if you just typically take a mini cycle to do your deload, that's the common way people will do it. When you go into the beginning of that deload week, you will have a a lot of muscle damage going in at the beginning of that week. So at the beginning of the week, you still want to maintain your normal protein intake. Okay? Because you have a lot of damage yet still coming in from those other from those previous weeks. But towards the end of the deload, there is going to be a reduction in muscle damage. So the demand for protein would be lower. So we can look at this in one of two ways. The simpler way is if we know during that week we're trying to repair and adapt and recover from previous weeks of damage. If we take away protein, that takes away our ability to recover. So the easiest way to look at protein is I'm just going to leave it the way it normally is. Because, yes, I might have less muscle damage during this week, but I still have all the damage that I want to repair from in the previous weeks. So the simplest way to look at this is to not reduce your protein intake at all during the week of a deload. The more complex answer would be to go ahead and decrease your protein intake by around 25. Well, I'm going to skip percentages and stuff. Let's just make this more simple. Is you can reduce your protein intake towards the end of a deload if that week you have not trained as much. Now, how much you decrease by is kind of an individual basis. Some people can probably get away with a 20% reduction, and it's not going to impact them if their training overall is not very aggressive towards their body structures. So, for example, if somebody's brand new to lifting and their bench press is, you know, maybe 225 pounds, that is not going to accumulate as much body stress and damage, connective tissue damage, as somebody who benches 500 pounds, regardless of body size. It simply just beats you up more to bench 500 pounds than it does to bench 225. So the person who benches 500 is going to still need way more protein because their body takes longer to repair than somebody who only benches 225. So if we keep this simple, let's say that we can leave our protein exactly the same during the week of a deload. Now, what if you're thinking like, well, what if I'm going over? What if I don't really need that much? Don't worry. Protein does not easily convert to body fat. Your body's going to use it to help recover with different processes in the body. So if the muscles seem to be kind of fully repaired, the body's still going to break protein down to kind of help grow your hair, skin, your nails, just do some other odds and ends that it has maybe been behind in doing in the previous weeks because it was so busy trying to repair the muscles. So let's leave our protein the same. Leave the protein the same during the deload. Okay? Now, this would even be true if somebody's doing like an aesthetic program and they want to deload, but they want to stay super shredded, super lean. You can leave your protein up. It's not going to hurt anything. Now, the carbohydrates and fats, your energy resources. If your intensity and volume in your programming is reduced, which is what a deload does. You do a reduction in volume, meaning you do less sets of what you normally would do, but you still use heavy weights. Or you reduce in intensity, meaning that you're still going to do your normal sets, like your normal, say, 5x5, but you're only doing 75% of the weight you'd normally do. So he said that's a reduction in intensity. Either way, you're not doing as much work as you did before. So therefore, like we said, you're not driving across country, you're only driving across the city. So you can reduce your carbohydrates and fats. What you can reduce them by, and this would be a relatively safe guesstimate for everybody, is 20%. So if you look at your diet and you say that normally, let's just do the math, make the math a little easy for me, okay? So let's say I eat 3,000 calories a day. And within those 3,000 calories, I have 150 grams of protein. Well, the protein is 4 calories per gram. So 150 grams of protein contributes to 600 calories of your day. So if you normally have 3,000 calories a day, and we know that 600 is coming from protein, that means that 2,400 calories are coming from carbs and fats. Okay? So, if we want to reduce by 20%, we would take that 2,400, find out what 20% is, which is 480, and we would take that away from the 2,400. So, we'd be eating 1,000 1920 calories. Then we add back in the protein calories, which was 600, and then it totals out to us eating 2,520 calories. So 2,520 calories. That would be a reduction of 20% in what we were looking to do in regards to reducing the carbs and fats. So what you would say to yourself is, how many calories do I normally eat? How many grams of protein do I normally eat? Okay, write those down, or like think that in your head. How many calories do I eat? How many grams of protein do I eat? Take your grams of protein and multiply it by 4. Now, take that number away from your total caloric intake. Now, that's what you have left. That's your carbs and fats calories. Multiply that by 0.2, take away 20%. So take away 20% from the carbs and fat calories. Okay? Once you've reduced it by 20%, you add back in the calories from your protein. And now that gives you your new caloric goal. Now, if somebody says, why am I only reducing by 20%? Great question. Our physical activity, our workouts, do not contribute 100% of our total caloric needs. So actually, around 70-ish percent of the calories we burn every day are simply from just being alive. It's referred to as basal metabolic rate, which is just the amount of calories you burn by simply being alive and breathing. So 70% of the calories you burn are just simply from being alive. So it's not like you don't burn any calories except for what you work out. You actually burn calories just simply being alive. You burn 70% of the calories you burn by being alive. Then we have just general physical activity of the day, which contributes to around 10%. So that puts us at 80%. Then we have things like physical exercise, thermic effect of food, some other kind of small odds and ends here. But if we maintain at least 80% of our calories, we maintain our normal basic metabolic rate, and we account for most normal physical activity, meaning that we're still eating 20% less than we would. We're still promoting fat loss in regards to kind of like if we were to have the same activity level. So we're still kind of covering our exercise activity calorie reduction, but we're making sure that we're not in surplus. So if you do a 20% reduction, you are taking away the 10 to 15% that the activity of exercise usually contributes, but you're also taking away a little bit extra to account for like a thermic effect of food change, which is the calories you burn from what you eat. So thermic effect of food is how many calories do you burn from breaking down the food that you eat. So since we're reducing our food, we're reducing our thermic effect of food calorie contribution to our daily total. We're also reducing our physical exercise total. Now, 20% is the biggest reduction you would do. So that's somebody who wants to make sure they're still kind of staying lean. They make sure that they absolutely have no fat gain whatsoever during the deload period. If you're not as worried about that, if you're okay, like, hey, you know, I know I'm going to be doing less, but, you know, I'm not trying to lose fat, I'm not trying to stay super lean, well, then you can just do a 10% reduction. And that accounts for the reduction in physical activity to make sure that you're not overeating during that week. So the changes I would recommend you make would be to keep your protein the same, reduce your carb and fat calories by 10 to 20%. Make sure you don't reduce all your calories, because we only want to reduce the carbs and fat calories. So make sure you equate to take the protein calories out and then put them back in. But that is essentially going to be the steps we would take to reduce our calories in a manner to account for the reduction of the physical activity in regards to intensity and or volume during the deload. Now, if you don't reduce at all, that's okay, but you're likely to gain a little bit of fat during that week if you're eating as if it's a normal training week. So to reduce in some way makes sense. To reduce in protein does not make sense. To reduce in carbs and fats does. Then how much do you reduce carbs and fats by? 10 to 20%. Now, hopefully this has been helpful. Hopefully this has made sense as to what would be the steps that we would do. So we talked about what does, like, how long does a deload last? We talked about what does a deload look like? And we talked about how we should change our food. Keep your protein the same. Reduce your carb and fat calories by 10 to 20%. Then the question of, do I go back to my heaviest lifts? Should I shift to a new program? That is going to be challenging to answer on a global basis. But actually, yesterday's podcast, we kind of talk about, how long should we shift with a program? How long should we expect results? So if you've been having success in that program, I think it's very shady that they haven't explained to you how to do this deload phase. I wish they would have done that. But if you do the deload and then you go back to your program and you get results, great. If you're happy with it and you like it, great. Keep doing it. But if you're not getting results, and then that's, again, listen to yesterday's podcast. If you're not getting results within, say, a 4 to 12 week kind of framework, you should probably consider a new approach or consider asking questions about what you're doing. So listen to yesterday's podcast, learn more about the answer to the question, should I shift to a new program? Okay. Now, going back to your heaviest lifts, that would be whatever the program calls for. So if the program calls you to do that, I don't think it's the greatest idea. you should typically have some type of change in the cycle. So there's a lot that goes into the question of what do you go back to doing? Should you go back to your heaviest lifts, just default to whatever the program tells you. So if you're following program and it says, hey, week one of a new cycle, do this, then just do that, whatever it says. Typically, if the program is at least decent, they will have accounted for what you should do at the beginning of it. With that being said, though, whatever you stopped at weight-wise, typically there's going to be something new as you come back into the program. Let's give an example of somebody doing 5x5. So say the first week they squatted 200 pounds, then the second week they squatted 210, third week 220, fourth week they squatted 230. And it was miserable. They didn't even get 5x5. They got like a 5, a 4, a 3, 3, and 3. Should I go to a deload week and then come right back to 230? Probably not. There's probably going to be some kind of thing where you have to kind of do a ladder effect where you take one step back, take two steps forward. There should be more structure to the program than just that. So check out yesterday's podcast to learn more about what you should do after the deload. And then also, if you have any questions, email us. Our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. So hopefully today was helpful. It was a lot of information, but hopefully it was helpful. Hopefully it gave you the answers. If there's anything else that you need, if there's any other questions you have, just email us at brutalirongym@gmail.com. Okay? Well, thank you for listening. I hope this was helpful. If you like today's podcast, click like. If you think the podcast is worth sharing, if it gave value to your life, make sure you share it with others so we can help them as well. You can share it on social media. You can share it in text message, email, conversation with a friend, however you do. We appreciate it that you do. Also, if you like this information, you can find more from us on our social media channels. Like we said, check out our channel on Instagram. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube under the name Brutal Iron Gym. Then if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we'd always love to hear from you. So thank you to this person who sent in their question, and we encourage others to do the same. Again, you can always send your questions to brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.